Hey guys, welcome to Overcrest. I'm Jake, and hopefully you already have listened to part one of our interview with Toby Pond and Nicole Pond, owners of Shielman USA, who not only own the awesome U.S. arm of the kind of legendary German seat manufacturer, they also are big into not only German metal, namely Mercedes, and some really crazy cool stuff from Steyr Puch, as you heard about last week. If you haven't heard that, go back and check that out, because this is now part two of the interview this week. Next week, we'll be back to our regular scheduled programming with Chris by my side, to the delight of some, and I don't know, probably, maybe, hopefully not the bane of others. Regardless, this is follow-up, of course, part two to the Shielman episode, off-road racing in German metal. And, you know, last week we heard a little bit about Shielman and kind of what that company came from and what it is, and what makes their seats so amazing. And then went into a little bit about their own history with off-road racing, that is Toby and Nicole, and how they did the Slow Baja in previous years. And that's ironic because we had already talked to Michael Emery, who was the founder of the Slow Baja, and how that kind of set the tone. They caught the bug, of course, for that, and went out, got their own race prepped or somewhat race prepped Mercedes G-Wagon, and continued then to get that prepped and ready. The experimental wiring, I think, was my favorite term from that that part of the interview. Just the rat's nest of wiring that, you know, they did much better to clean all that up. And we basically got to the point where, okay, they're down there, they're in Mexico, they're ready to go. And I have to say, now the real adventure starts. It's an awesome story, and it kind of goes through all the, like, the trials and tribulations, and, you know, the perseverance and really the camaraderie that I think is so cool about this race, what it sounds like, and their experiences. You know, I mentioned in the interview that Chris and I definitely want to go do the Slow Baja at some point, just experience this whole race and this culture. And after talking to Toby and Nicole, I want to even more. So buckle up. It is an awesome story about the actual race itself and some of their challenges. Before we get into it, though, of course, let's talk about our sponsor, Petrolbox. Petrolbox is a monthly service made specifically for the automotive enthusiast. May that be you or a car guy, car girl in your life. Makes a great gift, as I always say. Each and every month, they carefully select items from the industry, be it garage gear, tools, apparel. Usually you always get a t-shirt, you always get some really cool, unique enamel pins, and then detailing supplies almost every month. You get detailing supplies along with a tool that goes with the detailing supplies, in addition to some other either gadget or like innovation in the garage, or in the automotive industry, I guess is the best way to say it. So really cool. Every single month is unique. It's an awesome, if you've ever done any sort of subscription service, this is, I think, one of the most fun for myself, and I think a lot of our listeners who are definitely into cars and automotive culture. So check those guys out at mypetrolbox.com. Subscriptions start as low as $19.95 a month. You can also get the Petrolbox Premium, which is even more gear for $39.95 a month. And if you are going to do that, please use the code Overcrest, because that'll get you $6 off your order. All right, that's mypetrolbox.com. Check them out. Okay, here we are back at it with Toby and Nicole Pond from Shielman USA. Okay, so you're down there, and this is all before the race starts, and then you wake up in the morning and first stage.
Yep.
Yeah.
So how does the car do? How does it go? What happened?
Well, this is a really good question. So we actually, ironically, the Slow Baja, the first stage, a year earlier in the Slow Baja, was exactly the first stage that we did. So every year they change roots. So
sure.
It just happened to be that where we started last year, we knew exactly where we were going. We've been this road. Awesome. This is normal. And then we had done this road in our bone stock G500, right?
Yes.
And so keep in mind this, I have not tested the only test I did is I did 30 miles on the paved roads in all the right. G-Wagon just to, and that's where I found out that the master cylinder was bad, like the day before we were leaving.
Right. Okay.
We have no testing. Now the rally truck really isn't that modified from a stock truck, with the exception of strengthening, like the roll cage is tied in the frame and the shocks are tied in the roll cage.
Points.
But yep. The suspension points are all stock. So the T2 rally truck rules are that it's essentially a stock truck.
Okay.
With the exception of the shock absorber. So the shock absorbers are the type of shock absorber you would have on a proper rally or a proper Baja truck. So a triple bypass Fox shocks with external hydraulic bump stops. If those are dialed in properly, the truck should handle amazing and take bumps amazing. And so there's a compromise between taking bumps and then also being controlled. Right.
Right.
So
you said they're set up correctly,
if it's set up right. Yeah.
Okay. So that alludes to the fact that maybe yours weren't.
Yeah. I think that's the spoiler alert there. Yeah.
It was an experience.
So when they had raced the truck before, you know, they don't want, when you're buying a truck from someone, they don't say, hey, the suspension's totally not set up. You probably need to set that up. They say things like, it was a little bit, like a Buck and Bronco a little bit, you know? So we head out on this first stage, and the types of bumps that you're expecting to, like, you know, be your body clenches up and you're preparing for it. That doesn't exist at all, because the shocks and the springs, like, they soak that up. No problem. Like it's really a really cool experience the first time you have a car that can really take those big hits.
Sure.
But the thing that happened after the bump was that there was no control. So that it was like a pogo stick. Like it was literally like a pogo stick, and it would, like, it was porpoising back and forth. And when you landed on something, then it would just keep bouncing the next mile.
Yeah.
And so this beautiful,
it'll absorb the shock, no problem.
Yeah.
But then you're just going to keep kind of wavering around for a while.
Yeah, exactly. And as a novice racer, I have never had a shock like this, I'm thinking, well, this doesn't seem right, but maybe this is the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, you don't know what to expect. Like, is that normal? How far off is it?
Yeah, it seems pretty far off, but maybe it's normal.
Okay.
So this is like, a really cool other thing that happened was that there's a helicopter company.
Icon Helicopters.
Icon Helicopters. And for other reasons, from the last year, we know the owner of this helicopter company, because he was shooting us at a photo shoot in Cabo with the Porsches on the beach. So we knew him.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And so we found out that he has a Defender 90 that he had bought brand new in like 97. And when he was there the year earlier, he was really inspired to, like, turn his Defender 90 into a Baja truck and race it himself. He wanted to go from being a pilot to being a racer. Mm-hmm. And so he was in the same class. This class that we're in is short wheelbase 4x4. There's only three people in the class. One is like a proper, like, score vintage, like, Baja winning Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Cool.
And then there's us in this, like, total, like, hodgepodge old G-Wagon, and then there's Dave in this, like, super swanky Defender 90 that had been completely built for Baja racing. Like, it was really beautiful.
Got it. Okay.
And part of him, an offer that he made to us was like, hey, I want to bring my helicopter down with my pilots and my photographer and take pictures of the race, selfishly, because I'm going to be racing and I want them to take pictures of me.
Yeah.
But I also want to help spread the cost of this expensive endeavor with other people. And he made an offer to Nicole and I of like, hey, would you like us to do that? It was a big, big jump, but it was like, yeah, you know what? We may only do this once in our life. And, you know, it's for marketing. And
I'm looking at a couple of the photos and like, money well spent. Is this?
Yeah. So this first stage is you're going south and you're following the ocean, and it's like this kind of rocky cliff line and like little goat path, and it kind of opens up into a long straightaway in between two mountains. And as I'm feeling really comfortable because it's a long straightaway and it's flat. And I see the helicopter, we're heading south, it's heading north, and it's like beelining right towards me. And I'm like, oh, this is it. The helicopter's coming for the photo shoot. You know, we're going to get some photos of this thing. And again, I'm a novice racer. I've never had a helicopter following me, taking pictures of me. And so the natural instinct that I had was to accelerate. Because right, like that's I'm in a race car. A race
you gotta car make it look
fast.
Cool.
I gotta totally, make it look right? as cool as possible. And so I'm like, you know, I really have been. So this is a 5-day race. So you don't want to like go too fast an hour into a 5-day race. Like I'm going slow and like testing the waters here.
Sure.
But the helicopter's coming.
Right. Yeah, you gotta panic.
I accelerate. Yeah. So so that's what happened. And the as we're traveling across this super flat, wide, open dirt road in between these two mountains, there was a large undulation in the road. And so the front end went down and the back end kept coming up. And so we did like an endo, like going fast. Like, and so my recollection is like, I'm like looking at the dirt. I'm looking at sky in front of me. And then this endo happens. I'm looking at the dirt, and we're traveling on the front wheels, looking at dirt and
just don't hit the brakes. I would assume like,
No, just accelerate out of it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're good.
No, the spoiler alert here is that he didn't die.
Yeah. Okay.
Didn't die. Didn't roll it. Didn't. But it was,
I don't see a picture of the truck upside down. So I'm assuming you did not hit the brakes.
Came back down. But the helicopter had like swept around behind us and was like the camera operators like got goggles on like operating this like crazy camera and then the pilot's like doing his piloting thing. And so later that night we found that we were at the end and the helicopter. Photographer found us and he was like, dude, we got the best shot of the day. he was right there and caught the whole thing. So that was really fun.
Yeah. He said audibly, he's like capturing it and the pilot is watching just from helicopter and the pilot audibly goes like, oh, like, that was amazing.
That's awesome. That's super. So, okay. So that was day one.
That was day one. That was
the first stage.
First stage. So we continue along. We meet up with our team. We're still in the stage, but we're in like a transit section of the stage. And so we decided to check in with our team, fuel stop, just kind of see how everything's going. They kind of check everything out and send us on our way again to finish stage one.
So, I'm like, it's real porpoisey. Is there anything we can do about that? And they're like, oh yeah, tonight we'll dial it in. And I'm like, all right. So now we're on another stage that we'd actually already been on before in the other G-Wagon. And it's essentially like a mountain road, like a dirt mountain road through canyons. It's really like an epic driving road. Yeah. But then in Mexico, you can't take for granted that when you come around a corner, the road's going to still be there. And so there's actually one of the most interesting things about this type of racing, I think, is learning how it all works. And they use an FIA style rally book. So you're not allowed to go out first and test the roads and make your own notes. So they're giving you all those notes with all of the waypoints and all of the dangers and all of the things. And so the premise is that if you have a truck that's made for this type of racing, that you can essentially go flat out unless there's some type of a notation in the book. Like if they list a right, that right means that you probably can't take it flat out.
Sure.
Does that make sense? Okay.
Yeah.
And
no,
then
it
there's,
does. Yeah.
And then you might come around a corner and there could be a boulder in the road or the road's washed out and there's a cliff and they don't want you to die. So they tell that you exactly where that danger is. And then they have elevations of it. So there's stage, there's, you know, a one,
single
two or
caution,
three.
Double caution.
Triple caution means we're going to die. We did a whole episode on like rally notation.
Yeah,
for a while ago, and I love the descriptions of triple caution. At least back in the Group B days was like, oh yeah, you know you're gonna die.
Yeah,
triple caution is just gonna die.
And then this is a props to Nicole. So Nicole actually they in the Slow Baja they gave us the same book with the same notations, and so she had already like understood it, and she memorized all the FIA notations. So she's not having to like look things up or whatever. She's like reading the book and she's like calling them out to me as we're going. So we're on this mountain road. and it's awesome, but there's dangers, you know, like come around this corner, there's a double caution. There's a cliff, a car eater, she calls them, you know, like there's, if you go off here, it's going to like chew your car.
Is that how you're calling it off?
Yeah. Like, yes.
Car eater left.
Yes. So we're rolling and we're doing good. And there's a triple caution. There's a double caution around a corner. And then there's a triple caution to the right. And I go around the double caution, and I come into the triple caution, mm-hmm. and she's calling it out, and she's like, slow down. And I'm like, I'm slowing down. And I come into the corner, and it looks like it's just a nice normal corner. But the reason it was a triple caution is that for whatever reason, the gravel in that area was like super soft. And so the brakes, the bias in the brakes was way biased to the back. And so I'm in this little short wheelbase truck. There's a cliff to the right, and I'm coming around a right-hander. The back end comes around, and I save it like a foot from the cliff. And I have just enough time to think, like, okay, I didn't die. Like, we're good.
Yeah.
And then we got rear-ended. So
at that point, we didn't know if we got rear-ended or something broke on the truck, because we're just like, it's just dust. And we're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
And then we hear another vehicle and we're like, oh shit, we got rear-ended.
Yeah.
And so next, as we're trying to like figure it out, we're backing up, we look around, and then
they just take off.
They take off. We're like, what just happened? Oh my gosh. Okay. So
another component of this type of racing is that they don't want this to happen. So the Baja 1000, you're kind of on your own. Like there's rubbing is racing kind of vibe, and they nerf you. And like, if you're going too slow, it's like, hey, I'm going to push you off the road. And this racing, they want to encourage vintage trucks to come race, and they don't want you to, they don't want this to happen.
That's what you were talking about before, kind of the camaraderie.
The camaraderie racing, right? And exactly. Yeah. And then to make that more possible, we have a tracker device that has satellite tracking, but it also has radio frequency integration, so you can communicate between the other racers on the course.
Oh, got it.
So,
sure.
So one of the things is, like, if you're coming up behind someone that is, you're going faster than they're going, mm-hmm. you just push the button on the, and you can say, hey, I want to pass you. And then they receive a thing that says someone wants to pass you. And then you accept it. You say, I'll pull over and let you by.
Yeah.
And so the fact that that didn't happen. And the fact that didn't happen was really sad. So,
Was there any damage to either truck?
Yeah.
Our truck took some damage. You've got some of the pictures of it. Unfortunately, it was the back
exact spot that we just fixed.
Okay. Like, so actually, I didn't see it because I didn't know if this was the prior damage being documented
That's
too bad.
Okay.
So honestly, the whole trip is crazy. But that's like you had asked earlier if there's anything, any weak points on a G-Wagon.
Oh, yeah.
And that this kind of leads into that. So
apparently the right rear
corner is obviously soft.
That's apparently soft. Where they always go.
Yeah. The second thing was, this truck originally was a right-hand drive truck and converted to left-hand drive. And when they raced it in the Sonora Rally, the only failure they had was that the panhard rod mount, where it attaches to the frame, the whole thing ripped off the frame, like right at the finish line, which is uncharacteristic. So panhard rods on G-Wagons like shouldn't be a problem, but that was a problem for them. So they put a beefy panhard rod in, and they beefed up the frame, and everything was good for their second race. So the terrain went from, in our race this first day, the terrain went from like windy mountain road going fast to really like thick sand in the desert and rocks. And the rocks are the type of terrain that the sand is the kind of sand that you have to have momentum and like use power to like push through. But then there's unavoidable rocks that are as big as that'll hit the differential. So you're like under power, like smacking into like huge rocks. and it's not like, oh, I'll just go slow and like figure it out. It's like, we have 50 miles to go, and it's already getting late, you know? So you're like, you have to like, there's a certain level, like you have to travel at a certain speed in order to like.
There was an old adage I remember reading, and it was like, never, or what is it? Race a car that you hate, right? Because if you have any sort of like, you feel bad for the car, you know what I mean? Like, because I'd be like, oh no, what was that? And you know, you'd pull over and look, or like, am I leaking anything? Be like, no, if you're racing a car, you need to hate that car and beat it like you hate it.
Yeah. And I wish you told us this like 2 years ago, Jake.
I mean,
I haven't done any big racing or anything, but that adage always sticks back to me every time I hear these stories. It's like, no, racing of any type is super hard on the machines, and you can't feel sentimental about it.
So this was the most technical. So the first half, just like a little recap, though, a little kind of like get you in the mindset. The first half of the day was stuff we'd already done before in the other G-Wagon. And that let us think, okay, well, the whole race is like stuff we've already done before. Like, we got this in the bag, no problem. So then they put us out on the second part of the day is like, it was gnarly, dude. Like, it was the gnarly. I've driven off road a lot, and it was gnarly. It was 50 miles of gnarly.
And we're back of the pack. Like, we're not fast. We're in the slow.
Also,
slow
they started us late because we're at the end, because we're short wheelbase 4x4 trucks are the slowest cars in the race because they're just fundamentally not fast because they're, you know, they turn quick, but they're, you know, they bounce around. And so, so we're in this really gnarly stuff, and we get there's two types of communication that we have. We have a really good radio, and then we also have a GPS that has an inReach kind of built into it, so we can get text messages back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so we started getting text messages from Sheriff, who's in the 911 with, and Jeff Gamroth is the co-pilot at the first day, because Jeff wanted to like help him get through the first day. So we started getting messages from those guys that they're broken. They have a no start situation. They think it's the ECU they think is bad. And they're like basically like dead in the water.
Yeah.
And so they're like, Toby, come, you're behind us. Like, come meet us and tow us out. And Nicole and I are like super hyper focused on like, we're rallying. Like, this is our rally.
We don't have time for this.
And meanwhile, we hit an especially big rock, or we have an especially loud metallic sound. Uh-huh. And kind of like a metallic sound with like a thwang, you know? And the steering gets considerably more vague, but at the same time, we're in this deep sand and rocks. Like, oh, and so you don't know if it's like your front end's just like pushing around in the sand or what's going on, but it's like all of a sudden I'm getting really close to like trees. Like, Nicole's like, why are you almost hitting that tree? And I'm like, well, I'm trying not to, Nicole, but I'm, yeah, it's really deep sand. It's really deep sand. And I just keep powering
through it.
The OM606 engine is like, it sounds awesome. Like, the turbo spooled up and you're in this deep sand and it's like, you know, it feels awesome, but you're like, I just got to get through this. You know, driving. And Sheriff's like really far ahead. They have started this whole process. They were pretty far ahead of us. So we keep hearing these messages, and Nicole's focusing on the navigation, and there's not a road. We're like in the middle of nowhere desert. Sure. Like, there's a track, but there's not a road. So we're trying to keep on it and focus. And so we finally, it's like pitch black out. We finally get to Sheriff, and I pull in front of him, get our tow rope out, and I crawl under the front of the truck, and I'm like, just to like kind of check things over, because we've just had this really rough time. And I see the eyelet in the front axle where the panhard rod goes, and there's no bolt and there's no panhard rod. And I'm like, I'm trying to like be optimistic. And I'm like, maybe because it's like, it was converted from right-hand drive to left-hand drive.
Right, it's supposed to be there. Like that.
It's supposed to be like that.
That's just an unused bolt hole. That's all. That
yes. Yes. and then I look at the other end of it, where the other end of the panel rod goes, and I'm like, oh, there's a bolt in that one, but there's no bar. So there was basically just a bushing and the bolt. And the bar was completely left the chat. It did not exist.
We made a donation to the desert, which that was something you see out there. Lots of donations.
Lots of donations.
Oh, like, I bet.
Spare tires and parts. So,
I'm trying to think of the mechanicals of how this works. How are you able to steer still?
Poorly.
It's like driving or captaining a ship at this point. I'm like, all right, Captain Bond, like, don't kill us.
we air down. So I think we were at 30 psi in that deep sand, and the OM606 is just like pulling through, like, you know.
Yeah.
And so we're pulling Sheriff And so we aired down to like 15 PSI and it was awesome. Like it just popped us out of the sand, you know, going 15 PSI.
Oh yeah.
And then we're like, we're towing him. And then like magically out of the forest comes a sweep truck. And so because we have these GPS beacons, they knew that Sheriff was stuck and they came to pull Sheriff out. So I was able to disconnect the rope and let them pull Sheriff out. But now I know that I don't have steering. And so I kind of take the same route they're going and follow them off the course onto the main road. So it's late at night and we actually had this incredibly epic day, but it was like a super, the adrenaline was like pumping through your body and we're like, there's no trailer where we came out. So we either have to drive 40 miles on the highway back to town with no panel rod or wait hours for the trailer to come and then miss out on finding a solution.
And part of it was the trailer that was coming back to meet us, we knew only had space to put Sheriff on. And so the second sets of trailers, we knew were still
hours out.
And so we basically made the call to drive.
Jeff's like, it's going to drive better on the road than it did in the desert. And I'm like, well, I guess you're right. So we drove like 40 miles with no panhard rod, like just like steering a ship down the highway.
Yeah, at night.
Wow. At night. Okay. It was really, that was probably one of the bad, that was a bad decision. Everyone makes bad decisions. That was one of my bad decisions.
Did you have a spare? Were you able to
repair it? No, I didn't have any spares.
Oh, okay. So I mean, I brought a spare to it and hope for the best or what?
Yeah. So there's a lot of things about this culture that you don't know how they work until you have something go wrong. And when we got to the finish line, the party's like, again, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there was like a raging party with like all the people that are fast.
I guess I didn't understand. And this was this the very last stage? Like this was
no.
Done?
Every day has a starting line and a finish line. And then what they do at the finish line every single day is it's like a real finish line because you like get through the day and then you party. They have a catered meal and they got beer and margaritas and
what time do you start in the morning?
So the motorcycles start first thing and then they go on a separate route so that you never want to have a car come up on a motorcycle and kill a motorcycle. And then the fastest cars start first thing in the morning and they start at a bigger gap. Right. Okay. So then like every couple minutes, there's a fast car going out. Yep. And then those fast cars, like by the time I started that day, they probably had already finished because I'm going 50 and they're going 100. You know,
that makes sense. What I'm curious about is everyone's partying this hard. How are you not hungover when you have to start the next day at 7 a.m.?
They are. Yeah. Okay. For sure. Being hungover is part of
the racing process.
Yeah. These are hard people, man.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah. So another part of this culture, though, so we're at this finish line. There's like, it's like the after party. Like the caterers are like, you know, putting their stuff in the truck and the timing people, these are the people that make the whole race work is that there's an incredible amount of timing coordination, right? So the people that run the race, they're like sitting at their table, like, you know, taking people's incident reports and comments and timings and stuff. They're doing their thing. I have no panhard rod. And there's a tent set up with this, it's called the Fab School. And these guys have a legit Fab School in somewhere in LA.
Okay.
And then they bring a trailer with a mobile welder and steel and a tent. And then the gentlemen who are going to school will volunteer to come down and follow the race. And then, you know, if you break something, they'll weld you up or make something for you or whatever. So I roll up and I'm like, dude, I don't have a panel rod. And they're like, yeah, dude, I'd love to help you. Do you have the bushings? And I'm like, I got one bushing. And then they're like, look, we're kind of limited by the material we have. We don't have like thick wall chromoly tubing to make a panhard rod. And I'm like, well, what do we got? So they essentially had like a piece of pipe, you know, like water pipe or something. It was really thin wall. And props to them. They got to town and they made a panhard rod from scratch honestly, we were so like out of it, like psychologically out of it from this first day that I didn't like bring up a picture of what a G-Wagon panhard rod looks like to say like, oh, by the way, it has to bend to like go around the diff and it has to bend to go around the sump, you know? And so they kind of on the fly, like made it all work. And at the end of the day, it got us on the road so we could safely drive to our Airbnb. But at that point, it was like 2 a.m. or something.
Two in the morning, we're going to our Airbnb. Essentially, our team is shoving food in our face as we're like walking around like zombies. They're like, go to bed.
Yeah. Wow. And the year before, another part of our team had a buggy on the first day that they wrecked really badly, like tore the whole rear corner off the car.
Wow.
And they had found a local fabricator mechanic that they left the car with a year ago overnight. And when they came back in the morning, the guy had fabricated and welded up everything and they were able to keep racing. And so, so they were encouraging us to go. They're like, dude, go to this guy. He'll fix you up tonight. Yeah. Like make you a proper panhard rod. And I was like, oh, okay. Where's he at? And they're like, this is San Felipe. It's a pretty big town. Right. And there's no addresses or anything. And they're like, yeah, it's not that hard to find. Just got to get in town somewhere. And the only person who knew where they were had like probably had like 12 margaritas. Yes. And so I looked at him and I'm like, can you take my truck to go find this dude tonight and get it done? And he like looked at me. He's like, he just walked away. He's like, I can't.
Yeah.
So in the morning, we kind of got ourselves together. The car didn't, we went and met this shop that was really special experience. The guy had three trucks lined up that had broken the day before. And we were the second in line. It was actually the Defender. So the Defender with the helicopter pilot, someone had ran into him yesterday, but instead of it just being body work, it had like ripped apart his suspension. And, they had been up all night working on his truck. So they,
was this, it the same this guy really, that ran into you? I hope not.
No. That's another story, but to condense this a little bit, this really special local Mexican shop guy really graciously built us a beautiful. He went to the store and he bought he bought thick wall tubing. He came back, he bent it up. We had phone lines had all gone out. Like there's no cell coverage, and luckily my buddy Aussie that had helped us had. In his cache of pictures from the night before, still had a picture of what the panhard rod should look like. And so he fabricated and bent up the panhard rod from a photograph and did a really great job. So
that's super cool.
That got us back racing.
All right, guys, I am going to unfortunately interrupt an amazing interview here for 1 second, but don't worry, because I'm going to talk about something really cool as well. Our sponsor, Automotive Anonymous. You've heard of me talk about these guys for a few weeks now. It is an awesome online store for motorsport collectibles. It started out as kind of just a personal collection, and it's turned into kind of this curated, amazing store of vintage automotive posters and collectibles. There's a lot of Porsche stuff, but of course, it runs the gamut. I always like to just kind of pull up their site here and pick a product and just kind of give you a flavor of what you can find here. Or if you are not lazy, just go to autoanon.com. Let's see. We have, I love the vintage posters. Of course, they have enamel pins and collectibles. They also have vintage pins too. Those are cool. Okay, so what do we got here? Grand Prix. This is a 1985 original poster. I should mention that all of the posters on their site are originals. This isn't some guy on eBay who's just like making photocopies and selling. No, these are actually original. This one is a 1985 Nürburgring Grand Prix Strecke. Very cool. Oh, this is a fully German ad too. It's very cool. What do we have there? We have the Jägermeister 962, I believe that is, along with the Blancpunk 962. Oh, Trek Race. We get the old Mann racing trucks, whatever they are. This is really cool. And it's all inside an Opel steering wheel for some reason. Gosh, I may have to buy this one. And what I love about this site too is you can find some of these posters are extremely collectible. And he does a really good job pricing them, honestly. I know that for a fact. But like this one, it's less than $60 for an original, awesome, historical motorsport poster. And they have everything, you know, Porsche, they got Indy cars, Formula One, of course, some Audi stuff. What is this? Is this another Opel or a Renault? No, that's an Opel. Oh, that is cool. This is a 1985 Opel rally car with the actual rally stage map on it, too. You'll have to check that out. That's for $50 on the site as well. He also posts quite a bit over on his Instagram at Automotive Anonymous. As I mentioned, All posters are original. There's extremely rare pieces and some that are affordable and awesome. And they're authentic, of course. You can use the code OVERCREST to get free shipping on any and all of these posters. And I kind of was chatting with the owner last week. And one thing I do love is the deep research he puts into valuing these rare posters. So like I said, he's very honest about valuing them because some of them are extremely valuable. But it's super cool. I want you guys to head over to AutoAnon.com or just on Instagram, Automotive Anonymous. Check it out. Check out some cool things. These would make great gifts as well, especially like an old Audi Quattro here. Maybe you know someone with an old Audi Quattro, can't figure out a gift for them. This would be really cool to have a vintage period correct poster that you could then give them. I have a soft spot for 924. So here's the 924 original 1977 showroom advertising poster where it's the cutaway in the illustrated style showing everything. That's really cool. If you head over there, I'm sure you're going to find stuff that you like. So please do that. AutoAnon.com. All right, let's get back to our interview with Toby and Cole.
So we basically forfeited day two, got the car truck all fixed, and just threw it on a trailer after that. Because what we didn't know is had we broken anything else other than the Panhard rocks, so we didn't have time to go through it. And so we basically threw it on a trailer, towed it for the 4 hours to Bay of LA, where the next stage was going to start the next morning. And basically...
Is the longest day. So it's
400 miles.
Wow.
It's like driving from Boise to Salem, Oregon, off-road. It's like, it's incredible. So we rocked and rolled. Like the suspension was, we had tightened it up a little bit, you know, to condense this a little bit, the suspension is adjustable. There's bypass valves that you can close off the bypass. So the big mistake you can make with a really complex adjustable suspension is to make too many adjustments too fast.
Right.
And then
like, it would
be totally out of whack. And so we were kind of closing in on what are we going to do here? And we made a fairly big change and it was a significantly different truck. So it was like, now we're able to like, get our pace up and rock and roll a little bit. Okay. There's a really fun story here about the camaraderie. So this first day, the first stage of the first day is pretty fast stage. Mm-hmm. And in this whole race of like, there's 300 people started or something.
200 and something cars.
There was two diesel trucks. So we have a diesel truck. Yep. And then there's a volunteer group that runs a charity called the Warfighters. And so the premise is these are all veterans. They build these U.S. military trucks to race. And then they bring veterans never had this accessibility to come race with them and share this experience. Right. It's really cool.
Yep.
And so Ross Sport's been working closely with them, helping them raise money for their charity and we actually loaned them the Humvee so they could race it 1 year, that kind of thing. So there's a close camaraderie there. Yeah. Nicole had made friends with one of the organizers at the beginning of the race, and he was telling us, foreshadowing, that when we get to the fourth day, there was going to be a lot of this stuff called silt, and that he wanted to make sure that Nicole had a really good long shovel because we were going to need it to dig out underneath our truck because we were going to high center. So he actually had got a longer shovel and gave us his original shovel as a gift to like help us get through the silt. So these guys they're kind of in the same like part of the pack as us this third day. Yeah. And they blow by. It's like the guy driving is a great driver, and the truck, it was a full size Chevy military Blazer, you know, diesel 6.2 Blazer. And so he blows by us. And so we're like following in his dust, and the road went from straight to a pretty distinct right hand corner with he didn't turn right. He missed the turn and had gone straight off the road, and it was about a 10-foot drop. So he went straight off and didn't roll it, but like he was down in this like area that was like 10 feet down. And so we stopped and waved at him. We're like, you all right? Everything good? And they're like, yeah, no problem. You know, keep going. So we keep going again. And now like 10 minutes later, we get passed by the Blazer again, like, whoom, you know, like they got out of their hole. And now they're like, this tortoise in the hair again, you know, like they're going by us.
Hammer down.
and my philosophy is like, I'm a novice. This truck actually has the capability to go fast, but I don't want to be that guy that I just want to. It's a 5-day race. We're gonna just be calm and cool and then like navigate and like, and just, I want to complete this. So I don't speed up because I'm just doing our thing. But we come up on them and they're on the side of the road again, but they're like standing outside. So I pull off and safely off the road and the driver comes up to us and he's like, oh man, I think we're out of diesel. And I'm like, well, do you want some diesel? Like, because we're the only other diesel truck in the whole race. And all of the, like, there's a whole support network of people like the chase vehicles that follow after you to like make sure none of them have diesel because there's none of those guys are diesel, right? So there's like on the whole peninsula, there's like the big rigs and then there's us. There's two trucks. Yeah. And part of the T2 rally truck rules in order to race a diesel truck in the Dakar is that you have to have like a 42-gallon tank. So we have a 42-gallon tank of diesel.
Oh, yes.
So Jeff Gamroth is in the Cayenne behind us. So now he's stopped because he was following behind me. So he pulled over and he's like, Toby, how are we going to do this? And I'm like, I'm explaining that I have a 42 gallons of diesel, but I don't have a way of pumping 42 gallons of diesel out. And then I'm like, wait a second, I do. Because part of the prep that William and James had done in the community of G-Wagon guys is that somebody had suggested that they add this electric water separator lift pump called an air dog. So it has this like this big electric pump in the back of the truck that they all thought was excessive and they had kind of regretted doing because they thought it was maybe potentially going to add problems. And so Jeff's like, we like analyze all of the diesel lines. And if you have ever worked on diesel, you know that if you like open and introduce air into a system, we might be there for the next day trying to track down where we've got air problems. And so I'm like, Jeff, I'm very happy to help figure this out and give these guys our diesel, but I just don't want to make a mistake hastily, you know, introducing air into the system. And so we trace it all down and the return line coming from the injector back into the tank is an AN fitting. And then Jeff goes to his car. He's got 5-gallon NATO jerry can full of water on his back. He's developing a rear bumper for the Cayenne that has a tire carrier and a fuel carrier. Sure. So he wanted to test it in the race. So it has a full size spare on it and 5 gallons of water on the back of the Cayenne, like bouncing through the desert. So he goes and he's like, he has 5 gallons of water. So he pours the water on the ground and then we come over. I think I sent you pictures of this, like stand there with a jerry can. And so we take the fitting off and we turn the air dog, a lift pump on and we pump 5 gallons of diesel out of my truck into the water system. Can and get those guys going. While we're waiting to do that, a trophy truck, pulls in and there's steam coming out of it and they're like, hey, do you guys have any water? Five minutes earlier would have been perfect. So anyway, it all comes around. But to give you an example of how cool the race is, that we were literally on the side of the race for side of the road there for an hour pumping our diesel into their truck. And at the end, we were so busy, we gave them an incident report at the end of the race after we'd already finished the entire race.
Sure.
And they were able to look up our tracker and see that we were there for 59 minutes. And they credited us 59 minutes on the race.
That's really cool.
Really cool. Yeah, it was really great.
Awesome. It was great. So we ended up finishing that stage and then also finished – well, then we started stage two. So stage two of that day is starting in San Ignacio. And we're having an epic run because there's some really awesome flat out sections. And what they had done basically during kind of our check in with our team, what they call the transit stage, is at that point, they had started to really adjust our shocks.
Stevie actually called the guy in San Diego that built the shocks.
Who built them,
And he's like, hey, dude, this truck is still like all over the place. Like, you know, he essentially was like, do we need to close down the bypasses completely? Mm-hmm. And the guy Stevie was talking to at Down South was like, yeah, dude, just lock it down. Yeah. So at this transit stage where we were filling up with fuel, they locked the shocks down almost completely. So the bypasses weren't working at all.
Sure.
And then we went out on this stage that was a really fast open stage and it transformed into like a rally truck. Like it was It was like point and shoot, like rally truck. It was amazing. Like,
were you like, why wasn't it like this on day one?
Yes,
absolutely. No, but it wasn't like, I didn't say that once. I was like a Howdy Doody doll, like over and over again. I'm like, Nicole, it's so awesome. Like, it was the best feeling. It's so good. Yeah. So from that point on, it was so good.
Yeah. So that day,
what about the shovel?
Yeah.
what ended up happening is that day we got 25 miles towards the end. We broke our Panhard rod again. And
the replacement one broke in half. But this time I was able to stop and take it off. So we finished the stage with no Panhard rod, but we finished the stage.
Yeah.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So then our team was amazing, and they basically welded a snap-on socket.
They used a snap-on socket as like a joiner, and they welded it together.
Okay.
So we raced day four. That's allowed us to race day four, is where we encountered the four silt fields. And so
they had warned Nicole about with the shovel thing.
Right. So the first two we did great on, no problem. We're like, we got this. This is great. Third one, as you're reading it in the notes, it says, you know, find your own way. Like, you have a silt bed, and then it says find your way. So we attempt to find our own way. And so we go left, and we're kind of investigating left. And the instructions we received from everybody was go fast, mow down green, like take out trees. You just don't want to
do what you got to do. Don't go in the silt. But these trees were like big, and the cactuses were big. And it felt wrong. Like, I'm like, we're theoretically out of like out of 200 people, we're like 175th that have gone through this that day. And I'm like, this isn't right. Like, this forest isn't right. Like, and so I backed up, and then.
Oh, because you're not seeing any tracks the way you're going.
No.
I was going to say, couldn't you follow the previous.
Right, people? Right.
Okay.
So
you back up.
So I back up, and I can see the silt bed. And now keep in mind, we had just successfully driven through two with no problem. And
so you're like,
this is a G-Wagon, and it has an OM606. And like, how bad could it possibly be? Was what was going through my head. I was channeling my inner D-bag. And there was actually a group of people that were like watching the track. Like, they were just waiting for us to like.
And anytime you see a group of people, you know you shouldn't go that way. There's something special there waiting for you.
Good point. That's a good theory. So if you see a group of people, avoid.
Don't go that way.
Okay.
Yeah, no, right. So we're like,
right for the group of people.
Yeah. Went right through it. Yep. And it did really good until.
So it did.
There's a ridge in the center. So like, when in the wet season, this dirt is getting like, there's ruts from like water and mud, you know?
Yep.
And so that turns the silt. And so it looks like it's level. And then in the middle is the ridge of dirt that's hard as a rock. And so in the video, you can see I'm actually straddling the ridge, and I'm doing really good. And then I probably was going too fast, and I slipped down into it. And then I was doing pretty good. And then it like beached itself hard, like the center diff, like high pointed on this ridge. So we get out, and I'm like, dude, we're stuck. Like, it's like, you know, when you're like, you like beach yourself, like ramming speed and like, yeah. So there was a really gracious, fun group of people that were like laughing at us.
And
we were giving them the thumbs up and laughing back, because it's like, what else? Like, this is just, we're in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Mexico, and we're beached, and we're going to figure this out, you know? So there was
Thinking back, I mean, the whole point of doing this event, like, this is for the fun of it, right? Like,
oh, my God. Like, this is why we're doing it. Yeah. Like, yeah.
In the moment, you have to be so intense and like focused. Do you ever lose sight of that? Like, imagine when you got out of the truck and you're like, all right, thumbs up. Yes. Haha. This is funny. And this is why we're doing it. We're having fun. But up until that point, are you ever like, no, and get frustrated?
We did really good. Part of it is like one moment of not focusing. Like, so one of the highlights of this actually for me is that I have pretty bad ADD or ADHD or something.
Join the club.
Right. And there is not an opportunity for your mind to wander. Like if you're not 100% present and focused on the task of listening to what Nicole was saying or ordering me to do, which she enjoyed greatly, then it was really scary, right? So it was almost like 5 days of like focusing and finding like a different part of my personality that I didn't necessarily know was there, because it was like life or death. And I didn't have to go to the, we didn't have to go to the bathroom. Like we had to go to the bathroom, but it was like, there wasn't like a time where we're like, oh my God, I got to stop and pee or something. It was like your brain went into like a completely different place that
just that focus was pretty flow special. State.
Yeah. It was never negative because I think I've off-roaded enough and I've done enough stupid shit to know that there's always a solution. And so instead of getting frustrated, it's like, let's put that energy towards, like figuring it out. Like for once it's a good one.
Well, okay. So when you're stuck high pointed there in the silt field, did you use said shovel or try to winch out, or what do you do there?
First, what ended up happening is a side-by-side actually started coming in right behind us, which as we were kind of getting out and assessing, we didn't see them coming. And the people were yelling at us that you're in your helmets. You can't hear them.
Oh yeah. Yep.
And so all of a sudden we realized a side-by-side's coming in hot. Right behind us. And luckily they stopped. They didn't hit us. But at this point, because of the way he stopped, it kind of like kicked him out of gear. And he's like, can you guys help get me in gear? We're like, we'll help get you in gear, but we're hooking up our tow rope to you.
There you go. He has no choice.
he yanked us out a smidge, but just not enough. And so at that point,
all of the local dudes, they were like, just unhook it. They actually unhooked it for Nicole.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, we can get this. So they unhook it. And so at this point I'm like, guess I'm getting the shovel. So that's when one of the guys is like, do you want a tow? I'm like, what do you mean? Do I want a tow? And he's like, we've got a tractor over here. We can pull you out. I'm like, are you serious?
They're like, we've been waiting this entire time.
Yeah, exactly. And so
20 bucks.
I'm like, what's it going to take? They're like, 20 bucks. I'm like, done. Do it.
That's, it was awesome. That's why
and so like that, we got yanked out. And luckily as we got yanked out, we get through that silt field. We pause. We know there's another one coming up. And at this point, we're just kind of reassessing like, okay, there's another one coming up. We're not getting stuck in this one. So at this point, we pull over. I start walking it. And I'm like, no, we're not going through it. It's still too soft for my comfort level at this point, which is a little gun shy. So we're like, all right, we got to find a way. And that's when a couple other trucks came up behind us. And we're kind of all strategizing together. And that's when someone else waved us down and said, hey,
this is the way around.
You need to go around. Here's how to go around because we're all stuck over here and you don't want to come this way.
Oh, wow.
Give you an idea of how stuck we were and like what the potential was. Yeah. We found out later that somebody had got stuck in that spot. I was stuck. And the locals were there, but they didn't have the tractor. And so they left for 2.5 hours to walk to get the tractor and come back with it. And
that's
so
the people were stuck there.
That's why. And that had only happened like 15 minutes before we got there.
Wow.
So, and then that second spot, when we drove by out, we were out in the like cactuses and stuff. We could see into where it looked like there's like trophy truck on top of trophy truck. Like, it was like,
it was crazy. So, so that day, we end up getting through everything, had a great run. We didn't break. It was our first night actually crossing the finish line. So we get into La Paz, nothing broke. We are so excited. And so our team's waiting for us in the Malecon where they're having the party. And so it was an epic evening. So it was like, we finally made a finish line. And then we started our last day leaving La Paz, heading into San Jose del Cabo. And so again, that is the shortest day at maybe 130, 160 miles. I can't remember.
Okay.
But literally as I'm navigating, I'm like taking that day, like 10 mile chunks, like, okay, 10 miles. We can get these 10 miles done without breaking and just getting us to that finish line. So it's pretty
any
epic.
Any breakdown on that last day then?
It was funny you should ask. So a couple things happened it was different terrain and it was a bit sketchy. One was that there was a mountain pass with like really tight switchbacks that was kind of went on forever, going up and up and up and up.
Yeah.
And so the EGTs on the OM 606, when you're when you're romping on it, they can go up pretty quick, but there's so much airflow normally with speed that the intercooler balances it out. But when you're going really slow up a mountain pass, like you really had to watch it to keep backing out of it, you know, and not, not get hot with the AGTs. And then the very last stage is this like last hurrah. The town of San Jose del Cabo is built right next to a wash, like a big dry riverbed. Obviously, it's not dry all year, but when it's this time of year, it's dry as a bone, and it's really wide and it's sandy. And there's several local roads that just drive right across it, so that if it's wet, they can't drive across it. So we start north and like drive down this whole riverbed, and it's very deep, very soft sand. And again, the OM606 is like just you're at 30 PSI. Cause when you're running on the gravel and the rocks, if you run low pressure, it's like, you're going to roll your bead and damage your sidewalls and stuff. So we're at 30 PSI. We're like a mile from the finish line of a 5-day race. And we're
you're not going to really stop to air sand. Down.
No. And so the car, it sounds awesome. Like the turbo spooling, and it's like wax smokes out the bag and like, wah, you know? Yeah. And I just like, I call it, I'm like, Nicole, we're stopping to air down. Like, I don't want to, I'm feeling my adrenaline going. Like, it's that kind of feeling where like, you're like, dude, we're going to go finish this race. And so this is all,
my role as the co-driver was
to do this kind of stuff.
So air down, hook up recovery gear. So I hop out and I'm airing down all our tires. And this is the cool thing with the camaraderie. There was another group out of Ensenada that we had made friends with on the Silt Day of Racers. And so we were kind of about the same speed where we'd pass each other back and forth. And so as I was airing down, they actually stopped to make sure we were okay, which was really nice. And so it's just that friendly culture of racers. And so we air down and then we like make it to the finish line, which was
crazy. Is that three cars blew by us when we were airing down, and they were all doing the same thing. Like they were like trophy trucks with V8s, and they were like, their back end sunken down, and they're like, just revving out. And I'm like, all right, that's them. Like they're welcome to do whatever they want to do to their truck. You know, there's some level of self-preservation for me in this truck. And so we air down like calm and cool. And we like put our seatbelts back on and we start finishing, and we passed three of them overheated, like broken down. So, and then
so it's just thing,
people like roll their truck. Like there's people at the last 1 mile is like absolute chaos. Cause it's like,
wow,
you're so close to the end. And it's like, people go crazy.
Wow.
So we finished the race. We go across, there's a timing stage. You know, it's far away from like this party is like the actual finish. Right. Yep. So you finish, they write your number on the fender and they write your number in your book. And then there's like this, like this moment of like, oh my God, we just did this.
Yeah.
And I look to the right and there's a truck on a trailer, and it's the truck that rear ended us.
Yeah.
The first day. So they had rolled it.
They rolled it. It was a father-daughter team, and they rolled it on day three. Luckily, they were totally okay, but the truck was it was rough.
It was just a weird way to finish this thing of like, there's so many ways to do things wrong or have bad things happen, and you know, they didn't obviously intend to hit us, but it was like, it was just a very interesting
contrast of emotions. Like you guys are so high on like completing this and accomplishment,
it could have ended
over, and you say it could have been so much different,
totally. It's crazy. So it was really cool. We crossed the finish line. Our team
ceremonial finish line.
I'm just so excited. And then they have you park. So we're pulling forward and we're at an angle. So we're backing into the spot so we can get out and party with everybody. And it was really tight. And so we're doing like lots of little like point turns. And as we're doing this, and they're trying to direct us, they're like, Toby, turn tighter. And all of a sudden you hear this clink. There goes our Panhard rod again.
Panhard rod broke again.
We're like, it did its job.
It was the Lotus Elan of Panhard rods. It was designed just to finish the race.
Yeah. Anything more is just superfluous. Wow. That's really funny. I like that. So this was only, when did you finish this?
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, this wasn't that long ago. So you're still probably processing coming down.
Absolutely.
Totally. And then,
so what I was going to ask, what are you going to go back? Are you going to do it again? bring five question. Extra Panhard bars with you in the
all
truck?
All the bars. If there's a all bar, we're going to bring it. Yeah.
Yep, all of those. Yeah. Or is it something that you feel like we did that? It was a great experience.
So we don't need you can only be like an absolute novice, amateur, first timer once, right? And I think that when you do that, you have some, there's some grace as far as like lack of prep and lack of like naivete of, you know, you can kind of get away with some stuff. So if we do it again, my expectation of preparation is going to be a lot different, right? And to prepare it that way is a huge commitment. So both financially and also time-wise. And there's some other stuff that I'd like to do that takes up that time and money in the near future. And so I think that at least for this next year, we have some other stuff we want to do. There's actually a – okay, so this is a little segue. But do you know what a Fiat Panda – you know what a Fiat Panda is?
I do.
Okay. Do you know – have you heard of a 4x4 Fiat Panda?
I've seen them, yes.
Okay, so little known tidbit of information, the same company that makes the Pinsgauer, the Haflinger, the Synchro Golf, and the G-Wagon also makes the four-wheel drive system for the Fiat Panda, right?
So I didn't know, the Rally Golf, that was also...
Also Startbook, and also the Synchro Vanagon, the Vanagon Synchro.
Yeah.
Those were also made by Startbook, so the whole...
Okay, so what are we doing with a Fiat Panda now?
So there's a race in Morocco next year called the Panda Raid that's the same time as the Nora. Starts in Spain, and then everyone, there's like 300 Fiat Pandas. There's a two-wheel drive class and a four-wheel drive class. Everyone takes the ferry over to Morocco, and it's a 7-day race in Morocco in Fiat Pandas.
That sounds fun, especially single make and over in Morocco. Like, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we have a dealer, Carlos, and he has a shop in Miami called Rocco's 4x4. And then they have a branch in Spain. And so he reached out, he wanted to buy seats for the Fiat Pandas for the race. And I'm like, there's only one way that you're going to get seats. And that's if I'm sitting in one of them.
I like it.
Yeah.
So Nicole, your role through the whole thing was the co-driver, right? Did you ever think about swapping off? Do a lot of people swap off driving responsibilities?
Yes.
Funny, you should
ask. You didn't do that.
No. And the reason why is during the safari class. So we started out where I was co-driver, Toby was driver. And so we did 4 days, and all of a sudden we're like lunch day five. And granted, during the safari class in 2022, we weren't taking lunch, but you know, it's the last day. We stop in Cabo Pomo. Everyone heard of great tacos. We're going to stop and take a break.
Yeah.
So we have lunch. We're leaving lunch. And
no, there's a little bit more to the story. So we're with the this is actually kind of an interesting story. So we're with the we're fully now embedded with the Rapido class.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is like the last day we're with Rapido group, and we stop for lunch all at this long table and this little, we're the only people at this restaurant. She said Cabo Pomo, but it's a very remote little town. And so everybody has a beer. And I'm not a big beer drinker. And so I'm like, Nicole and I are like, I'll have a margarita. So the waiter comes by, I'm like, I'll have a margarita. You know, they're having beer, I'll have a margarita.
When in Rome.
And so when in Rome, right? So everyone gets their beer, and then the guy, he like walks out to the shack out back with like the ice and like the limes and stuff. And he comes back with like
this a goblet.
Yes.
And it wasn't like a goblet of like gross margarita. It was like a goblet of like probably the best margarita I've ever had.
Yeah. You know?
And so
drink it.
It's a long lunch. Yeah, it went down easy. So now we've probably had a little bit more margarita than you should have, and I regret that we did that. But
okay,
it's also, we're in the final stretch between Cabo Pulmo and San Jose del Cabo is maybe like another 3 hours of driving. And I'm like, Nicole, this is your last opportunity to drive. Like, if you don't hop in and drive right now, this is gonna be over. This ride that we're on is done.
Yeah.
And so I really
throws me the keys.
Throws the keys. Yep. Now she has had 4.5 days of perfecting the route book and the GPS and the waypoints and the calculating the splits of the mileage splits and the hazards and
There's a lot to it.
So the other thing too is Toby's dyslexic.
ADD and dyslexic.
So I'm out in the driver's seat.
Yeah. Can't read it.
So I'm out in the driver's seat.
And is a little buzzed.
So I'm now in the driver's seat. I hand him the rally book. I have it all lined up. I'm like, here you go.
Yeah,
track the waypoints on the GPS. We got this. Plus, we're following the group. They're calling it back. So I'm putting along, having a great time. And the group starts calling back to us saying, hey, guys, there's three unmarked speed bumps. Do not hit them hard. They're not in the book. We're at waypoint, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, Toby, how far away are we from that? He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, what waypoint are we at? Like, look at the book. He's like, what book? And I'm like, the book I handed you 10 minutes ago.
It's on the ground.
He's like, you mean the one on the ground? And it's not just put on the ground. It's like
lost
on the ground. And so at this point, I'm driving. I take the book. I'm catching us up to the GPS. Oh, no. And I'm like, we can't hit these bumps. And so, yeah. So that might have caused a little bit of trauma.
Got it.
At that point, we decided that my role as the navigator, his is the driver.
Makes sense. But that seemed to work.
But Nicole's in fairness, she's a really good driver, and so she could have driven the whole thing. It was not a, it was more like a chosen thing. But she's a good driver. So
yeah, no, I was joking earlier about the fact that you work together, you live together, you're married, obviously, and drive together. Like that takes a special relationship. Do you think coming out of it, like, are you guys closer for it, or was that Honora especially like, did you learn anything other than not letting Toby navigate?
Lessons were learned, Jake.
We can leave it at that.
I think that was actually probably the funniest thing is people were like, what did you guys talk about for 5 days? We're like, there was no talking. It's like, it's just me like yelling like, turn left, turn right, hard right, hard left, go slower, go faster.
That's awesome. So, okay, I'm really excited, moving right along, that you guys are partnering with us for the Overcrest Rally in 2023. This is awesome. And I do think it's very cool that, you know, you talked about how you wanted these seats and you couldn't get them. And so that's why you started the whole Shielman USA venture in the first place. Yeah. And I really want to kind of call out to all of our listeners, like, we have a really big contingent of German automotive enthusiasts here. And like these are the seats. Like these are very cool seats.
They're really special.
I think it's really cool that you guys, now we kind of have this avenue to work with you guys and hopefully spread the word. And where can people check out the seats and find out more if they're interested?
Yeah. So go ahead.
So yeah, you can go to our website at www.shield-mon.com. And so everything's out there on the website, and feel free to reach out, send us an email, and we've got a great dealer network across the country also.
Awesome.
So we're able to answer questions and assist any potential customers.
That's really cool. Yeah. And we also are working on another little project that you know about that we have not announced yet. On the rally, our Overcrest rally, that you guys are supplying some seats for as well. So really excited about that. I love what you guys are doing, and I love you guys and the stories. Super fun. We'll have to have you on again soon.
Yeah.
But real thank quick, you guys I just, so much.
Wanted to, do you mind if I just wanted, there's one more just exciting piece of information that we haven't talked about before, but there's a seat that was very famous that we made in the late 60s, early 70s, called the Shield 101.
And I just realized we haven't talked about seats.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
This entire time.
Okay. All right.
Yes. No. Yeah. Okay. So the Shield, the 101, you said?
101. So there was a 100 seat that was, it's a basically a fixed back bucket seat with a steel frame and obviously foam cushions. And then the 101 was the same seat, but it had the addition of a adjustable inclination in the backrest. So it looks like a fixed back seat. It is essentially a fixed back seat, but with this extra level of adjustment. And Shield seats were always famous for their comfort. And so by adding this level of adjustment, it was even more comfortable for more people because you could find that perfect fit. And so for the 100-year anniversary of the company, they wanted to bring back the Shiel 100 seat. But it's always takes a little bit longer than you're hoping. So now we're on the 101st anniversary and we're bringing back the 101, the adjustable seat.
Very cool.
We've been testing it, and we have a Group 4 rally car build, Porsche 911.
Yep.
We've been testing it in that, and even to the level of we're remaking the exact right black corduroy that we used yep. originally with the right cord. So it's going to be like a really perfect, period correct, really comfortable seat made in Germany. You know, at the same factory right outside of Stuttgart, and we'll be launching that at Rennsport Reunion. We've got a big booth, and we'll have a lot of partners and friends there to show it off.
Super cool!
And launch it, yeah.
These, I may actually have to talk to you about a set of these seats for my 911 because I have a 70 911T.
Oh, it'd be perfect.
I know these would be perfect. I love this look. That's really cool. Okay, so you're going to be at Rennsport as well. So I know. I don't know if I'm going out to Rennsport. I know a lot of friends that are. So listeners, friends, et cetera, we can find you out there as well.
Cool, man. Well, it's really been a pleasure, Jake.
Yeah, this has been awesome. Thank you guys so much.
All right. Thanks.
Take care.